Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Good afternoon from Aspen Public Radio. This is Valley Roundup. I'm Allison Bektesh. Thanks for tuning in today. Joining me in the studio are Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News, and Mick Ireland, columnist with the Aspen Daily News. A little later, we chat by phone with Will Grandbois, editor of the Sopra Sun. Thanks for joining us. Stay tuned. This week, Aspen City Council decided that Sarah Ott, who's the assistant city manager, will be the interim city manager and be in charge temporarily while we look for a new city manager. Mm-hmm. Curtis, Sarah was at the meeting where that happened. She says she basically has experience along these lines.
Right. And I think she actually was the manager of a – they're called townships in Ohio. And I didn't know what a township was because I'm from the western portion of the country. But in the old days, a township was sort of a unit in between a county and a city because you had to have sort of smaller government units. But it's outside of Columbus. It's a big kind of suburban area from my understanding. And that's where she's from. She kind of decided that the Aspen lifestyle might be a nice change for her and her family and moved out here about 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. She started working for the city. So she's new.
Yeah.
You know, it really is a remarkable time at the city. There's never really felt like a blank canvas quite like this because you have the city manager of almost 20 years departing along with his senior, you know, most senior level assistant city manager. All out in the span of, 3 weeks? Just, you know, poof, gone.
Not to mention the finance director left recently.
Finance directors have been gone. But, you know, they promoted. Yeah, Jack Wheeler's gone. The chief building official's gone. Oh, and by the way, the mayor and two council seats are going to turn over in 3 months. So the city clerk probably is also on her, assuming.
If she wins the city council.
Yeah, but even if she doesn't, can you go back? You know, her whole point of running was, I can't stay quiet at the meetings anymore. so do you?
Hard. Yeah. Well, and I actually feel that way throughout Aspen. You know, the school superintendent is not his contract's not renewed. The HR director at the school was this week let go officially, and a lot of our nonprofits have a change in guard. It feels
Aspen
Public Radio has their new executive director starting this month. It feels like there's this moment. I don't know if it always cycles like this, Mick, where it's like the guard change in Aspen.
Recruiting is going to be very difficult, and the reason is people with the talent to run a district here or a city, they're used to a lifestyle where they live in a single-family house with a yard and, you know, very traditional, and they're paid well, and they come here, and, you know, the chance that you're going to get somebody who's really, really talented is going to want to live in half of a duplex that really needs a lot of work. That's going to be a tough call. And when people evaluate whether they want to take a job as city manager, they look at how the council has been acting, and the council has been pretty erratic.
Though we will have perhaps a new council that they'll be interacting with. Curtis, that makes me wonder, you know, Mick's implying that someone will be moving from somewhere else and coming to Aspen, and also this kind of 6-month timeline that they've given, first of all, to have a new council come in and then recruit and get someone here. Does that mean we're not really looking at internal candidates?
No, I think Sarah made it clear that she could be interested in the job. You know, it was pretty remarkable. On Monday night, they had an executive session scheduled where the council and Sarah, who's now the assistant city manager, were going to talk about maybe her becoming the interim city manager. And that's a personnel matter. So you have legal cover if you want to kick the public out to go have that conversation. But Sarah requested that it happen in public. So you kind of had you know, she got up there and sort of said where she's coming from, and the council said that they support her, and it just it was pretty easy. It was a pretty easy job interview. But she said, do I want the full-time job? I'm not sure. Wow. I have to see. It depends on what you want. I mean, this is the only job, this and the city attorney, that essentially the public's representatives are in charge of hiring, that the city council hires and fires the city manager. So, you know, the next city manager is not going to come from the staff. It's going to come from the elected officials. And so they have to determine what they want.
That was such a wise move, or, you know, it's just so aware of what led to where we are right now by Sarah in my mind. Because if Steve Barwick and Barry Crook are out under this overwhelming impression that they don't listen to the public, that things are opaque, that they're not accessible, and her first move before she even gets put in as interim is to have a meeting that could be private be out in the public. I mean, that seems like she has her finger on what people want.
She might have a good idea what's going on.
I think Sarah could do the job, but I think one of the first things you'll see in her contract request is for severance, because it's the council's very mercurial. It has been, and the public puts a lot of pressure on the council to back down from decision after decision, and they do. And when you're an incoming city manager, you're looking at how long am I going to be here, and you know, nobody wants to move here for a year and then have a council sweep you out of office because Tony Kronberg objected to something you did. So it's a tough call for Sarah. She has the talent, and even if she takes the job, you've got to still got to replace her, and you got to replace Barry.
So I'm curious about what if we have some interim assistant city managers in place. Let's get to that in a moment, because what you're alluding to, Mick, though, I thought is the system in Colorado. Though we have these the town manager system appointed by councils, you know that's not supposed to last long. What was so remarkable about Steve Barwick was that he did last through so many councils, right? Like, don't people who choose this career path kind of know it's a term limited position?
They do, but you don't want to be on the hook if it's a 6 month or a year and you haven't done anything wrong. And I'm not saying Barwick didn't deserve to be fired or did, but you don't want to be in a position of moving your whole family and putting your kids in school, and then a year later you have a new council that says, well, we really want a different solution to the entrance to Aspen, so you're out of here. When things go bad, as sports, as in government, fire the coach, because you can't fire the team.
It seems like Barwick did have a pretty good package, and that there was some kind of apologetic, like the council felt like they owed him even more than was in his contract. He gets to keep his house longer than his contract said, and the health insurance coverage. Like, why, if it is this role that turns over in a lot of other communities, why was there that empathy?
Well, part of the problem, Allison, is there wasn't really a process for determining what happened and the reason for firing him. You don't just have three people walk into your office and say, well, you know, we're for firing you, so you might as well resign. I think there should have been a dismissal, leave without pay or leave with pay for a couple of months so they can investigate what went on and what his role in it was and what he should have done. And instead of that happening, they did the verdict before the trial. And I'm not saying that it would have come out or should have come out differently, but usually you give people a chance to say something before you find them guilty.
Well, you don't think he looked at the situation and said, all right, I'm out. I think there was both sides involved there, and he was probably happy to step down, especially since he did have the very kind severance agreement.
And a year's salary.
Yeah, like, why wouldn't you?
There's another party at interest, though, and that party interest is the public. And so the public now doesn't have a thorough investigation of what happened, what went wrong, why he should leave. Because my understanding is, and Curtis, you know better than I do because you cover the city, that there were other incidents involving Barry that were unaddressed.
A lot of it did go on behind closed doors, which is frustrating. And I think it's on us as journalists to figure out what exactly did happen. And, you know, it's never too late for something like that.
So she's been serving as an assistant city manager for the next 6 months-ish. We're thinking she'll be interim city manager. Doesn't an interim city manager need assistant city managers? And who's going to fill that role?
Well, they're going to have to hire.
Right. They're going to have interim assistant city managers. But then that permanent role will be hired by, you know, that was made clear this week, too, that, you know, the full-time next one or two assistant city managers is going to be hired by the new full-time city manager. And from what I understand, the whole structure is up in the air. Like, there may not be two assistants. You know, maybe there's only one.
Okay.
You know, you have Scott Miller, who's the director of
Public Works,
I believe is his title. That, you know, he's up there. He's in the same office suite. So it's all kind of in the air how they're going to restructure this. And it is an interesting time.
So we don't know yet who those interim would be, if there are other roles, and then their roles needs to be filled and trickles down.
My understanding is that they're going to do a reorganization of who is in charge of what. Mm-hmm. You know, what will Scott Miller do? What will the new assistant, the new Sarah do,
And the council gets to decide this, or this is a six-month-from-now discussion when we have a city manager?
This is a city manager decision.
So how lame duck, like what can the city of Aspen get done right now?
Well, it's kind of up to the council, and that was part of Monday's meeting was, you know, okay, tell me what your top priorities of all the things we have going on in the city right now. What is most important to you that we make sure we push forward? Because they're probably not going to be able to do everything. You know, Sarah told me she has 14 department heads directly reporting to her right
now.
Holy cow. Which is more than what's normally on your plate as the assistant city manager. So certain things are going to, are going to sit on the shelf for a bit, but certain things are not. You know what? One example is this new city hall project that we had the whole election on back in November. They want to get going on that. They just put out a press release that said they're going to have a groundbreaking
February 6th.
Next month.
Start on that.
Unless they need to rethink it again.
Should we put it to the voters?
Again.
I am wondering, Mick, to ask you this again. Have you seen this? Do we always kind of wash out leadership all at once and bring new ones in? Again, I'm talking the city, I'm talking the schools, I'm talking like Aspen Institute just lost Wanders.
You seldom see multiple institutions turning over at the same time. However, I would point out that one of our fine institutional leaders was serving at $500,000 a year and left for a while and came back at $950,000. It's getting harder to recruit. This town is very testy. It's very tumultuous. It challenges leaders all the time. And
can I then transition into one of the columns you've written recently then? Do we have the correct impression as to who is, how Aspen is growing and if it is growing both in people and in actual building growth?
Well, I think we don't. I think...
Well, you're seeing the candidates for city council and mayor say that we need to control building, that we need to control traffic. And you're saying... it's actually lower than usual.
By objective standards, growth here is pretty flat. I would say that on a population basis, if that matters, we're probably at zero growth or maybe even declining growth. And the only thing that ticks the official numbers upward has been in the last decade was annexation. Hmm. That's not really growth. Hmm. If you put two together, you don't have more.
Adding literal land to the city of Aspen.
Right, and the traffic over Castle Creek Bridge is stable. It's never yet reached the peak in 1993, although it is creeping up on that peak. 40 years ago when I came here, traffic was back to the airport, and guess what? And that was every afternoon. Still that way.
I mean, I think you have seen a fair amount of in-migration. I think that's a consequence of the economic boom. You know, things are going well. People can afford Aspen real estate because they just got a big tax cut. So, hey, why not move the family here? Because the schools are good and they're, And so you see a lot of that. And at the same time, Mick and I worked on some of these numbers at one point a year or two ago. You had a loss in population in your 20 to 40 age bracket from like 2008 to 2006, an actual loss, which for Aspen, this place that's supposedly this mecca for attracting young ski bums who want to come live the dream. I mean, that was a very sobering statistic to me and maybe the first time you had ever seen that in kind of the modern history of Aspen, where we were losing population in the younger demographic.
And that regional housing study that just came out this week was showing that 65 and older makes up something like 70 to 80% of the people who are coming to the Valley. I mean, the people moving here are older. Mick, you pointed out, though, the amount of money you can make as a young ski bum back in the day, that salary hasn't risen to the point where you could pay rent and food anymore.
Right. And I had... strangely, I had the unique opportunity to move here in 1979, and there were three different jobs I could have: dishwasher, bus driver, and lift op, and they were all $4.50 an hour. And if you take just CPIU and you don't take into account Aspen prices, which are a little higher and grow a little faster, all those people except the bus drivers have lost ground.
Because what's that $4.50 an hour now? What would that be, like 20 something?
It'd be like... I think last time I did it was about $18.
Okay. And City Market has a poster in their front door right now that says they're hiring for $14.50.
Yeah, so there you go.
Yeah, and the ski company as well. Part of the problem, frankly, is we have people coming in who are unable to bargain for wages. So if you're undocumented and you're not treated well, you don't go on strike.
Right.
Because you may never come back and you may not get paid.
Let me ask you, as you are making your decision for who to vote for city council and mayor, what could possibly set the candidates apart? And what different paths are we choosing between right now?
I don't know what path we're choosing because nobody's articulating a path. And maybe they've learned that when you do that, that good deed never goes unpunished. Mm. And the rest of your life, you're going to, you know, 6, 10, 12 years later, you're going to hear about the time that you didn't give somebody as many units in their subdivision and it cost them millions of dollars. I would like to hear somebody say, I want to finish Burlingame and I want to do it now, or I don't. And I would like to say somebody to articulate a reason why they want to do that. I would like to hear somebody say, okay, you don't want to do shift because the cab companies didn't like it. So what's your alternative?
So do we have 8 interchangeable candidates right now?
Yeah, you know, I think they're all talented and well-meaning, not interchangeable. Some have lean a little bit this way or not, but you're not really seeing which way they lean at this point. And so I don't know what's going to come of it.
But to your point, Allison, it's now January 18th. We will have our ballots in less than a month.
Wow.
And the election is on March 5th, and we'll actually count the ballots. So it's crunch time. It's a shortened campaign season thanks to our moving up of the election. And, you know, maybe having a looming deadline coming up faster than we'd prefer will make get our butts in gear as a community to really answer some of these questions. We'll see.
Curtis Mick also just alluded to the federal government shutdown, which is ongoing. And you did a story. Mm-hmm. Who's that affecting in our region?
It's affecting anybody who works for the Forest Service. It's affecting the TSA agents and the air traffic controllers at the Aspen Airport. Which, you know, if you put them all together, it's maybe a few hundred people at most. But these are really significant jobs in our community. It's a critical part of our infrastructure, and it's.
TSA at the Aspen Airport over the holidays. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. the place to be, and mm-hmm. so they're working still, not being paid.
That's correct. That's correct.
Whereas the Forest Service agents are also not even working.
Most of them are just on furlough. They're not working. They're not getting paid. So that's, you know, there's a lot of things that, you know, especially with the Forest Service, this is a time of year where they're working on long-term projects and planning and trying to figure out what's going to happen on our public lands in the next couple of years. And when you're forced to take 3 weeks, a month, however long this goes on off, I mean, you're going to come back to work and you're going to be so far behind just to get caught up. Then in the face of just the day-to-day, it's going to set them back for a while, and that's pretty tough.
No one's
happy about that.
Yeah.
Credit to Alpine Bank, which apparently is offering interest-free loans to people who are in that predicament. Mm-hmm. But it's not quite the same as having a paycheck. And there are a substantial number of people here and elsewhere who are contractors. So they don't have any guarantee that mm-hmm. when the shutdown ends, they will be reimbursed as though they had worked. And so they have to go out and look for another job, and that jeopardizes coming back. And
the Alpine Bank story is really interesting to me. First of all, it's a little scary to me if people are – we're learning how many people live paycheck to paycheck, which is hard enough anywhere, very hard in an expensive town like Aspen in the Roaring Fork Valley. But secondly, if these are the people who really need it because they really are living paycheck to paycheck, what if they can't? You know, it's interest-free for 6 months, but then it goes up to 18%, which is rather high. So it just seems like you have to ask yourself a lot of really serious questions just to get this one donation, essentially.
Is this going to make long-term prospects for working in, you know, these public service federal jobs? It's going to make them less attractive, and I think that's a problem for everybody.
Yeah, Americans have never been historically very good at setting aside money for contingencies. We just don't do that, and we get hurt as a consequence.
Well, as things stall out in other ways throughout the Roaring Fork Valley, Curtis, we have one thing starting up and running. Aspen is readying itself for 5G and small cell technology. That is your direct headline because I don't know what it means. And so I'm hoping that you'll explain it to me.
I had to learn. So small cell is like the next generation of cellular antenna. So that we have wireless cellular. Now it'll be streaming broadband everywhere. Everywhere, and these things have to go. They need a higher density to work. So 5G is like which is the next generation of cellular service that isn't quite here yet, but it's coming.
Okay.
Which basically just means there'll be faster data download speeds than there are now, and more you know, more prolific, you know, spread out in higher densities across urban areas, especially.
So we need the infrastructure that builds those towers.
Right. You need you know, the stuff you have now is not adequate to deliver that kind of broadband service.
Okay.
And the reason this came up, and this, you know, it's related to the federal government. Apparently, an edict came down from the federal, you know, from the FCC that regulates how local governments deal with applications from wireless providers, you know, cell phone companies, the people who build the towers for the cell phone companies. If they want to build a tower, they have to go ask the local government for permission to do it. And the FCC handed down this new set of rules that strengthens the hand of the providers. It streamlines their application process. It gives the towns less time to review them. It says you can't collect excessive fees. The towns can still make some rules on how it plays out, but you don't have total power. You can't say no at all. You know, it's like the city of Aspen couldn't say none of these are allowed in the historic district.
Okay.
That would be not okay
per
this new rule. And so this just happened in the fall. It's taken effect officially now. And so the city is rewriting its sort of wireless infrastructure, cellular infrastructure code, which hasn't been touched in a while, apparently. It's not quite up to date with what we have now. So I guess it's a good opportunity to try and get a handle on this thing that's apparently coming.
Did you know what they look like, though? Like, will this be this eyesore? Are they going to be huge towers, or is it?
It just depends, you know. So it depends on where you put them.
Okay.
You know, if they're sitting up there on the side, you know, one of these things is they're allowed to put these in the public right of way, and you don't see a ton of that now.
No.
But the potential is there that they could sort of take over, and they like to be in the air, but they're sort of big, kind of giant canister looking things.
Okay.
But they need to be in the air.
Thank you guys both so much for coming in today.
Thank you, Allison.
Thank you.
You are listening to Valley Roundup on Aspen Public Radio. Thanks to Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News, and Mick Ireland, columnist with the Aspen Daily News, for joining me in the studio. I also spoke this week with Will Granbois, editor of the Sopra Sun. He recently wrote about a data collection effort by some locals involved in the Roaring Fork Leadership Program. They're hoping to keep families and their pets together in the Roaring Fork Valley's tight and restrictive housing market.
My approach to the story, other than sitting down with Wes Boyd of Colorado Animal Rescue, who's sort of the impetus behind this project, and a couple other members of the team Scratch and Sniff, which I thought was a fun one, that Roaring Fork Leadership has put together to launch this survey. They're concerned, and Boyd in particular has been watching people having to surrender their pets over and over again. It's 40% of the surrenders they get. We're talking, you know, 50-odd people every year in this valley giving up their pets that they want to keep. It's not that they, that it's not working out. It's that somebody is saying to them, you can't do this.
Right.
And he's hoping, and the team is hoping, that while there may be good reasons for that, they might be outdated reasons, or they might be one-time reasons, or one horror story that a landlord heard, and that that once they have more information, they can offer solutions. They can say, you know, maybe we can subsidize a deposit to protect you from some damages, or maybe we can help you create some new lease language, because often it's really tough, especially on an HOA level.
Okay.
To change the legal requirements. So even if there might be a sort of an understanding that, oh, we technically don't allow pets, but we'll make an exception in this case, somebody could make an issue out of it at any time. And so there's this sense that there might be kind of a legal or contract issue that if they had some setup language, that would help alleviate it. And then they're also just kind of hoping to tell stories, to share all the positive circumstances that have happened, all the times that pets haven't been an issue. And with that in mind, I reached out to Roaring Fork Rentals and Roommates, a Facebook group, and just looked for feedback on whether people are having this problem, because we're still early in the survey. The survey hadn't gone out yet, so there weren't those stories to tell yet. But there was an almost immediate response and a clear indication that there's interest in that. We had landlords respond. We had property managers respond. We had a lot of people who have struggled to rent, some of whom said that they were basically homeless for months while they were trying to look for some place that would let them have their pet. And it sounds like, you know, as many people are making that choice of giving up their pet in order to have a place to live, there's another demographic that Wes isn't seeing that are giving up a place to live in order to have their pet.
Right. It's totally fine to have a dog in Prada, in Aspen or Dior, but you can't have one in your own apartment. I mean, there's this disconnect, I think, is why it's so upsetting between if we are dog friendly or not.
Absolutely. I mean, the culture around bringing your dog to work, around the infrastructure that we have in place, around the assumption of trail, you know, our outdoor approach, and dogs in particular sort of fitting into that, it makes it all the more strange, I think, for people to struggle so much to have a place to live with their dogs. And, you know, there are, I'm not saying that I don't understand it or that Wes doesn't understand why a landlord would hesitate to deal with a pet, knowing, maybe having experienced a situation where some damage was caused or there was a noise issue. But the general consensus, even by some of the property owners and landlords that responded to my inquiry, is there are some bad pets, but they are the exception.
Okay.
And there are a lot more bad people out there. The people who can really, I mean, people are going to be much better at wrecking your apartment than any animal could manage.
Well, yeah, to use the stereotypes as much as I can, you know, a single woman in her 30s with a dog, I don't know who I'm referring to, as compared to, you know, two new to the valley 21-year-old ski bums as roommates, you know, like who's going to treat that as their home more and make sure that things get put in place and that walls don't get, you know, holes or stains and all that. Like, to me, the presumption that a pet equals damage to the house has really held back such a slim amount of housing is available in general. And then you take away a huge portion of that when you say no pets allowed.
Right. And then that's the other challenge, right? There's this fear that maybe we're the reason that it's not happening is that landlords know that they have a captive audience, that there's
right.
So much, you know, that things are slim enough already, the demand is there. They don't have to be pet friendly in order to get tenants. I'm sure there are people trying to move into the valley or move around in the valley without pets who don't want pets.
Yeah.
I certainly got the sense that there's a substantial demographic that are being actively limited either in getting pets or in keeping pets because of their living situation.
Did Wes, again, the executive director of Colorado Animal Rescue, did he say that they have good success in housing those dogs when he's had to take in pets from families who want them but aren't allowed to have them? What happens to those pets?
They mostly get rehomed. I mean, it seems like Colorado Animal Rescue has a pretty good track record. There's a demand here. We're as you said, a kind of an animal-friendly area, and so the folks that can do have the right opportunities are taking advantage of it. Assertion was he's glad to be able to do that. He'd rather they stayed with their family
right.
in the first place.
So let's close then on the survey. What exactly can our listeners do then to participate?
It's available on all of CARE's social media and its website. It's for renters, it's for landlords, it's for property managers, it's for homeowners. It's very much an across-the-board situation. If you have any sort of interest or anything to say about it, you're going to be able to answer some questions like, would you be willing to pay more for pet-friendly housing? That seems like it would be an incentive to a landlord. Or what factors have influenced your decision not to allow pets if you're not doing that? Or to allow them if you have? It's just creating a dialogue.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Valley Roundup on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Thanks to Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News, Mick Ireland, columnist with the Aspen Daily News, and Will Grandbois, editor of the Sopra Sun, for joining me today on Valley Roundup. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.